Four, three, two, rewind.
Rise of the Fallen, MMO, Quests, Pantheon. Once again, time to pledge. Very excited. We're here to talk. Let's get this party to
share your thoughts.
Co-host Derek.
Weekly Adventures. Co-host Desiren. We're almost professional.
Full disclosure.
Dangerous combination. Creating content and optimizations. Got a lore video coming. Cannot wait, which is all about Runefast and some sort of a cake. Mail on a Sunday.
News and notes.
Schedule for this week.
Hot cocoa. All these people.
Supports the show. Adventuring party.
Are you ready? Let's go.
Let me take a deep breath.
Hello, friends and fellow Pantheon enjoyers. We're back after our week off to bring you another episode of the Pantheon Plus Rewind, the podcast dedicated to Pantheon, Rise of the Fallen, and its community. This week, we'll bring you a thorough recap and discussion of the recent developer live stream with all the beans from David Nefel Beach. We'll check our calendar for upcoming content, give a little rewind update, see what our community is coming up with, and finish it all off with the last half of the Tale of the Eridola. We're getting our tools together to make something great, but like a lot of good gameplay, we'll want some friends to help us, and that's you guys. So please join me, Desiren, and my crafty co-host, Theric, for this week's Rewind. I know we're recording this, you know, everybody knows, so we're recording this on Friday, St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day,
you know, days in the future. I'm celebrating with a beer during our recording, so it kind of counts.
And a Guinness, right?
Yep, good old Guinness stout here.
I'm going to be celebrating with a Shamrock Shake from McDonald's later tonight because I have to drive my kid to work, and as I've said before, he works at McDonald's, so I'll be going there, and I'm calling in my dad favor and getting a Shamrock Shake out of him.
That is hilariously American.
I love Shamrock Shakes. I don't like McDonald's. I don't really eat McDonald's otherwise, but Shamrock Shakes
are my weakness, man. That's fair. I forgot. It's like one of my favorite things about Guinness, that get in the cans. They have the little nitro thing in the can. And when you pour it into a glass, it is like one of the most beautiful things in the world.
It truly
to
is.
Watch.
It's an art.
Oh my gosh, it looks so cool. And so I just like stared at my glass when I got it earlier. I was like, oh yeah, it's been so long. But
yeah, I remember we had one. We went to a pub one time when we were in Ireland, and I ordered a Guinness, of course. My kids were little at the time, and they were fascinated by it. They're like, wow, how do they do that? They're like, it's so like thick, and like the foam on top is cool. And I'm like, I know, right? I know. It's part of the deal.
Oh, dude, totally.
It's an impressive drink.
Well, you know who else is an impressive tall drink of water?
Yeah, good one. Nice. Who might that be?
That's our awesome and very, I would, celebratory? Adventuring party.
Celebratory. Yes, agreed.
So we've got Ziplocs on the Dark Merrogue, Sparrow on the Elf Ranger, Bounty Code on the Human Wizard, Screech on the Scar Bard, Wiki Woo on the Human Enchanter, Shuriken on the Dwarf Cleric, Horsosaurus on the Human Warrior, Fury Wrath on the Archai Summoner, Churadude on the Halfling Dire Lord, Paveho on the Gnome Wizard, Asera Avienda on the Elf Ranger, Galarain Moonsong on the Elf Ranger, Annoying Llama on the Human Monk, and Stands in the Fire on the Dark Mer Cleric.
Yeah, Stans joined the adventure party, which is great. He was a recruit, and now he's a full adventure party member. I'm very happy with that.
As a cleric, it turns out this is one of the only situations where we can't force him to be a tank.
Yeah, he's no longer required to be our tank. I'm sure he's very happy about that.
Oh, man. Well, as always, thank you, everyone, on our adventuring party and everyone that supports us, you know, in the Patreon, through the super chat or super thanks on YouTube, either during the premiere or in the comment section. And if you'd like to get your name on the scrolling banner, you can do one of those super chat, super thanks, and join the adventuring party with our Patreon there. And we'll have some updates on that in a second. But, you know, as always, we'll get all sappy. You know, we appreciate you guys so much. And especially after this break, you know, it's just really nice to just have all you guys to help us out and just be super cool human beings.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, yeah, like you said, Desiree, we want to do a bit of an update on the Rewind here, a little bit of housekeeping. Because, you know, we had a week off to reflect on things. And it's actually, I was I guess, surprised. But we're at almost 150 episodes, if you can believe that. It honestly feels like we started doing this thing just yesterday, and yet here we are. And like you said, we want to personally thank each and every one of you for the support you've shown over the years for the podcast. You guys really are the core fans that have allowed us to do things like give away thousands of dollars in pledges, upgrade our recording and editing tools, and you know, get VR to let us stream pre-alpha stuff. So it's all exciting. And you know, quality of the show is always our number one priority. And we're always trying to find interesting content to make sure we're not just like repeating the same things every week. Admittedly, you know, we've been struggling a bit to find ways to do that. You've heard in the last few shows, you know, like the community content slow down, and sometimes the news, we get a little bit samey with our conversations. So, you know, entering that territory where kind of feels like the discussions we've been having and are repeating a little bit, and some of the news hasn't exactly been news. So, you know, all that to say, we really want to keep the show fresh. And we also want to be mindful of ourselves and not getting burnt out or bored with doing the show. I can't tell you how many podcasts I've been a big fan of. They just fade away and you never hear from them again. And I really don't want that to happen. Yeah. So Desiree and I, you and I talked about, you know, how are we going to address that issue and what we want to do. And what we're going to do is we're actually going to reduce the frequency of the show from weekly to every 2 weeks, so twice a month. So instead of having a rewind on every Sunday, that we're going to do the one on the Sunday after the VR monthly video dev update is, which is usually the second week of the month, and then one on the calendar or the newsletter release, which is usually the fourth week of the month or the last week. So this may just be a temporary change. You know, we might go back to doing weekly episodes once Pantheon is, you know, a little further along. Like maybe that'll be an alpha thing when the time comes, which I think we would all be okay with. But we'll see how it goes. It's not bad news. It's actually good news, I think, because it means the shows are going to be a little longer than the 1 hour. And I know everybody, when we do the premieres, everybody's like, oh, an hour, it's already gone by so quickly. Yeah. And it goes by super quick. So we're going to do a little bit longer episodes, but they're going to be every 2 weeks instead of every week. So that means the next episode after today is going to be Sunday, April 2nd. So, and then the other good news is that we talked about the Patreon, the tier costs. Obviously, we're doing half the shows, so we're reducing the costs of our Patreon tiers by 50%. So the party member tier goes from $20 a month Canadian down to $10 a month, and the recruit from 10 down to 5. So, you know, this is the obvious thing to do, and it's the fair thing to do, and it's sensible. And, you know, if you've ever considered joining the Patreon, now is a great time. It's half the price it once was. if you don't want it, you know, a bi-weekly show instead of a weekly show doesn't really work for you, that's totally fine. We get it. If you don't want to be a part of the Patreon anymore, totally respect that decision. We never take that support for granted. But, you know, this was a hard decision for us to make. And I know I sort of agonized about it a little bit. And Desiree and you and I talked about the pros and cons. But we do feel like it's a change for the positive for the show and the quality and the longevity of the show, I think. Yeah. So it's really important that if you guys have any feedback on this, or you have any comments on this, to let us know. You know, you can reach out to us individually, or you can leave a comment on any of our content on this video if you like, letting us know. But the rewind's not going away. We're just gonna slow down a little bit.
Yeah, and match our pace with the pace of everything else for now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And we never want to be rambling on pointlessly, wasting everybody's time. That's not our style. Exactly. So, having said that, I think we should get right to it. What do you think, Des?
Yeah, we do have a show, so let's do it.
Let's do the show. This week in Visionary Realms News and Notes. All right, so this week's news and notes comes on the heels of the last VR dev update from March 16th. This was the one that featured Minus and Nefel, all about crafting and gathering systems. So there's sort of three areas that I think we've sort of organized the information into that they talked about. And it was an interesting stream. Lots of information about crafting, as you might expect. And whether you're a hardcore crafter or a casual crafter, somebody who dabbles, I think it was useful. The first thing was we saw some updates to the UI elements and a little bit of talk about the quality of life when it comes to how they are doing crafting organization. They started off the stream looking at the UI and they showed the professions tab. And so this is the sort of, I guess, main character display. You've got your adventuring tab and then you've got your crafting tab, which, or the professions tab, as they called it.
It looks oddly familiar. The arrangements. Yeah.
It does.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, like there's good design and sometimes you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Within the professions tab, they had the schematics bag, which is an automatic container that is only for schematics. I think Nefel said limited to schematics. But the point being that it's not just free storage, but they want to make it easy to access your crafting and your harvesting gear and the schematics, right?
Yeah, I think the quote that I liked out of this was that, like, he said, we don't want to penalize people for being a crafter, as in, like, bag space, right? They don't want to crowd, like, people to have to crowd the inventory just because they choose to do crafting and gathering. I should say crafting, because this is just for schematics. So you still have to take some room, for the loot that you get, just like you would loot from adventuring. Right. So, but to have a nice specific place for things like schematics that you could imagine will get, unruly, quite quickly. it's a really nice, appreciated and I would say a surprising thing to see, just right off the bat. Right. That they're thinking about that kind of quality of life. But
yeah. I mean, especially it hits home for me right now playing LOTRO and all the crafting and all that, you know, the materials you get just as random loot, just general loot. So much of it I just destroy. And there's just so much inventory space that you can't fit everything in. And I love that they're being mindful about your materials and the things that you're going to be collecting, as part of your crafting and gathering adventures. So yeah, not penalizing people by inventory space for being a crafter is well said. You know, they also talked a lot about avoiding some of the tedious aspects of being a crafter or gatherer. So for example, like, you know, not having to switch between your crafting and gathering gear.
Yeah.
Not having to switch on your ability bars. You know, when they open the spell book, basically there's a mining tab that when you clicked on that tab, it automatically switched your ability bar to your mining abilities. And then Neff added on to that saying that your gear is going to be swapping based on the task at hand. Like what you do, if you go up to a mine, to a node and you start mining it, it automatically switches. So no more hitting mobs with your fishing pole, you know, like, or no more, you know, hitting that rock with your sword. So I love that. And, they actually talked about there being a toggle to help you, like if you wanted to visually stay in your crafting and gathering gear, you could actually do that. So, you know, sort of deactivating that auto switching, just from a appearance standpoint. So a little bit of a gathering wardrobe being there, right?
Well, yeah, it's like, so this is something they did, and this is going to come up a lot. Like, it's David Beach. Yeah. Like, he's a fan of Vanguard. If you don't believe me, look at his background in this video. But they did this in Vanguard, and I thought it was a really nice touch, because, so, you know, sometimes you just wanted to walk around in your, you know, crafting clothes, diplomacy clothes, gathering clothes, you know, whatever. Like, I know it's kind of a little thing, but just that you have the option, like to run around town in your crafting clothes. So it's going to be obvious that you're a crafter. It's really neat. And I think just like in Vanguard, if you start, you know, gathering, it's going to swap. And if you start adventuring, it's going to swap automatically as well. It's just, it's like, this is the kind of stuff that comes from like having a lot of experience in MMOs, like the little quality of life things, like switching your bar automatically. Like when you click on the tab in your ability journal and it switches to your, you know, that hot bar.
Yeah.
It's like little things like that. I really appreciate it, but it just comes from like the annoyances that we've had to deal with. Right.
Yeah. It's not revolutionary. It's learning from the past and, you know, making the game acceptable on a modern quality of life scale.
Yeah, man, and that's probably going to be a going theme throughout this episode. You know, not for revolutionary, sure. But you know, it's just solid, built on a lot of things we've learned. And I did want to note another little like small detail that I think I pointed out last time this was teased, but there's a Trident slot in the paper doll.
Oh yeah, right.
And yeah, and Neff did confirm basically, you know, underwater spearfishing kind of a thing. So really looking forward to that whenever we start seeing more swimming and stuff as well. See if it's like a separate skill or if it's also fishing or like, because it's separate, you know, there's a fishing pole too. So I really like games that have like underwater fishing like this. I don't know. There's something about it that's...
Have you... Tell me a game that has underwater fishing.
It's mostly like survival games. Like I think, you know, Ark.
Yeah, and but like that's like underwater hunting though. Is it like,
Yeah.
Like underwater combat is one thing, but underwater harvesting is a different
thing. I don't want to bring up Guild Wars 2 because that's not really what it is.
Combat. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm thinking of like a lot of the survival games that I enjoy. And because we're going for like the underwater gameplay being meaningful, it makes sense that just as in above ground, when you're coming running across nodes and stuff like that, as you're adventuring down in the deeps, there will also be quote unquote nodes to get. Right. So yeah.
Subnautica. I should have thought of Subnautica right off the top. Right. Cause that's, I reference that game all the time and I didn't even say it, but yeah, no, that's cool. I'm glad you brought that up. I missed that actually. That's a nice little bring up there. You know, looking at the UI even more closely, I really enjoyed the layout of it, having the crafting professions and gathering profession boxes sort of separated like that.
Yeah.
Nefel said that there's more detail that's going to go in there, but it's just not implemented yet. So that, you know, basically saying the details of your progression in those professions is what's going to go in there. And I'm curious as to what that's going to look like. And he actually said specialization system in terms of your crafting and gathering. And I'm not sure what he was referencing there. Do you remember? Like, do you know what he was talking about?
You know, I wish I had time to really research this. So I apologize to our viewers for not being like... you know, the like super researched, but I do know it's been brought up a few times already, the specializing kind of a thing. And I, you know, basically the idea that Nefel's pushed was that you pick, I believe it's just one, but again, I want to go back and look at this, the past conversation about this, but I'm pretty sure it's just one of your professions and you specialize in that. So it's like basically the trade skill end game. So specializing basically, you know, means that you pick one thing that you're really good at and then you have your other things that you're like decent at. So Nefel made it pretty clear that, you know, you won't be able to be the best at everything on one character. On that note, it was reiterated because this has come up a few times that everyone will be able to do all of the different gathering skills at a basic level. But again, you know, you're going to want to specialize in something particular to get the best like results of that one thing. We'll kind of see exactly what that looks like, over time, but I'm guessing like the specialization and all that stuff, because Alpha just needs basic crafting. I feel like we won't really see that until we're, you know, in Alpha. But yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about that as well. Like what specializing means, how it plays out kind of a thing.
Yeah. As you're saying it, I'm kind of remembering the conversation a little bit and thinking back on it. And I am recalling that they've talked about it. I would have liked to have seen that in the stream a little more. So like they went into the cooking and mining in particular, but, you know, knowing that there's more than that, it would have been nice to see quite a, you know, a little bit more range and a little bit more depth when it comes to the systems that they want to do.
Yeah.
But I do have to say,
if you do want to research that, I know it's going to be in the, bring out your devs, the previous version of that show, the last one
the round table.
Yeah. Dev round table that Nefel was on the last one, that's where this information is. I just I didn't have an hour to go through it when writing this up, but that's where the information is.
Yeah, and the Library of Pantheon probably has it there as well. They've probably cataloged the information, and so you can look at, go there to search it up as well. But I do want to say, like, the cooking stuff that they showed was really cool. I really, really liked the cooking UI that they showed with, like, the pot and, like, the little, you know, window that you throw the ingredients in and the categories of those ingredients. They looked, you know, it looked very well put together. And yeah, I was when we were watching it, I was like, excited because it showed you like the output of what was going to be created, and then they said, oh, it's only for the demonstration purposes. So I was like, ah, rats, you know, like, so no, they don't get to, they don't show you what's coming. It's like you got to experiment and discover, which is good. I love that too. You know, if you're not into discovering, of course Googling is your your magic weapon here to find out what makes what. But I mean, it's nice that there's going to be you know, a discovery involved for people that want that. I think that's fun.
Yeah, like, obviously, as players discover recipes, it's going to end up on websites, online tools, that kind of a thing.
And people just saying it to each other, like, oh, you know, this and this makes, you know, bear meat stew or whatever.
Yeah, I like the idea that there is at least some element of discovery, even if it is just until players discover all the combinations. And I don't know if there's going to be limits to that. Like, you know, maybe if you don't have the high enough skill, it won't actually combine the things. Little things that might make it easier to just not just spam every combination until they're all figured out, right?
But
I do really like this kind of discovery because, so it's not completely freeform, like Mortal Online, where it's literally just like a window with slots. You just throw a bunch of stuff in there, hope it comes out. And there's like, there's, you know, this crazy complicated like algorithm with like what it outputs. It's,
I remember when you told me about that before. I was like, I think we were sort of playing it at the time, and you're like, okay, here's what I've learned so far. And it's like barely scratching the surface of what it can do. And you're like, I'm completely intimidated by this, and I know very little, but here's what I know.
Yeah, I'm like, it's, wow. On one hand, it's like really interesting because it's literally, you can throw anything in the pot and it might make something insane. But it is really intimidating. And I think to make that a little bit more approachable, and also just to give it a bit of structure, I really like structure this. Is a good way. Like, this is...
Yeah, the structure is important.
You know,
I mean...
Go ahead, I was just going to say, you know, creativity comes from limitation. Like, you've heard that, right? So, and in this case, I think that kind of is emphasized. It's like, you have your slots. I'm pretty sure they're, the ones I saw were like meat, fruit, nut, herb, fish, vegetables. Like, there were some more. I think you just didn't scroll. You know, it gives you quite a spread. And, you know, one could estimate what a meat is, you know, and who knows what might actually go into that slot, right? So there's like some real interesting freedom, but it's still just enough limitation to know, like, okay, I probably need these kinds of things at least.
Yeah. And then they showed it a little bit later with the merchant that they've added for this weekend's pre-alpha session, where you can buy some of the ingredients, like the fish in particular, I was thinking of, because fishing's not in the game yet. So, yeah, I like that. I like that, you know, when you're running around and you're like, okay, I think to make like a stew, I probably need meat, I probably need a vegetable, and I probably need, you know, a fish, let's say. So you know that you can, you know, probably combining three items like that will get you something at least.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you can sort of make sense of
it. On that note, like, it was confirmed that if it's not a valid combination, it just won't do the craft.
Right. You're not going to lose it. It's not going to fail and you're just gone, but you just won't do it.
Yeah. And I think that's probably a good thing. I think it'll make it a little bit easier for players to just kind of like spam stuff to like, you know, learn the combinations, you know, without any loss. We'll see how that plays out. Like, but, you know, at least for the sake of, not punishing people, especially in the early like game when it's actually hard to get, you know, items, right? This is probably a good thing.
Well, I mean, think about Mortal Online 2. As much as you love, you know, what they're trying to do, and I like the little time I spent with that game, but we have to admit that as cool as that system of crafting may be and like how deep it is.
Yeah.
You haven't heard people talking about it. You haven't heard people raving about it. And there's a reason. It's just because, you know, we are, you know, you have to find that happy medium of depth and approachability. And
yeah, exactly.
Sometimes you go too far.
And it's like some people prefer, you know, closer to one side of the spectrum than others, right? So,
yeah.
Because on one hand, you could say it's really cool that I could, this is going to sound funny, but it's really cool that I could throw all of this stuff that I've gathered into a pot and make an absolutely terrible dish. But then once you kind of figure out how it works, you're making stuff that's like way, way better. Like that is kind of fulfilling, but I think you still get that from this system in Pantheon. It just won't be as punishing where, you know, you've been playing for, you know, 120 hours and then you realize you've been cooking your, you know, whatever dishes so wrong that it's like not even helpful. You're just making your character fat for no reason. And it's, anyway.
Empty carbs.
But like, that's the funny thing is like, that's actually a thing, which is why it can be so frustrating. Because the game does not help you. Right. So yeah, this is good. It was also kind of noted that it's planned for some finished items to be ingredients in further crafts. I thought this was significant.
Yeah.
I'm sure this isn't just cooking either. But, you know, basically confirms that there's some amount of subcombines planned. You know, I don't know if we're going as far as like the, if anyone played EQ2 at launch, pinions, man, I got to make all my pinions.
I don't even know what that is. Oh my gosh. I played it at launch and I don't remember what that is.
Well, there were just a lot of subcombines for early EQ2 crafting. And I'm a fan of subcombines, but I can understand why people like think it's really, really tedious. We'll see how that plays out. It could just mean that like you make a finished item that's a usable item, but then you can add another item into it. Who knows? But it was confirmed that later on down the line, you'll be able to use finished items in potentially another recipe. So,
yeah. 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 And they did confirm as well that there's going to be an in-game cooking journal, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So keeping track of the recipes you've made and what you've done. I think that's just a nice quality of life piece. We mentioned, you know, it's going to be a running theme here, but would be expected.
Right.
So, and this is the first time that they've actually implemented this in the game. So it'll be part of this weekend's pre-alpha testing, which is cool. And I really want to, I said it on Pantheon Plus U that I want to spend some time with the system and get a better sense of it and not feel the pressure to go out and adventure and do like, you know, typical, you know, XP grinding. I want to actually look at this and get an understanding of it. The other piece I thought, like I said, you sort of alluded to it, is that it was surprising to see some of these UI elements getting some attention, because I don't really, you know, don't recall them talking about hiring a UI designer. And it's something we always say is, oh, it's placeholder, it's temporary.
Yeah.
Small detail, but I like the look and the text, and I hope that whoever designed this, you know, is sort of, I feel like this is very functional and looks nice, and I wouldn't mind if it stayed this way. So I don't know. I know it's probably not up to your standards. I fully expect you to tell me that this is nothing I should get excited about, but it's okay.
So it's not like, you know, their developers can't work on the UI at all without a dedicated person, right? It's not like it's a different kind of programming necessarily. You know, they can add functionality as the gameplay, you know, comes in. But to me, it's like programmer art, if anyone's heard that term. You know, it's a placeholder, but it gets the job done, you know? So I still really hope that they get an actual UI designer, or at least someone that is more like experienced in it, just to kind of take all that functionality, clean it up a little bit, make it a bit more visually appealing, you know, maybe extend the functionality a little bit. Because I do feel like what we have here, while it's functional, I definitely think it could be refined at some point. Now, hopefully they're building it in a way where a UI designer can come in later on and set it up really nice, use all the functions to just make a more, you know, a nice experience, nice looking experience. But it's nice that they're thinking about it and they're already kind of building it in a way that at least makes sense in the meantime. Like, I wouldn't be mad if this stayed for like a while, you know, it does what it needs to do. I just think like as far as standards go, it looks rough.
it's basic, but I mean the functions that it's trying to convey are also not overly complicated.
True.
Right. So you don't need a really, you know, fancy UI at this point, because just the functionality is not there to support it. So
yeah, that's true. One last thing. In this kind of area, I guess I kind of couldn't help but throw it in there just in case we skip it. The challenge, if you remember, this was talked about for a second. So it was confirmed that, like, even though right now when you hit the button, it just crafts the item, right? They are moving towards, in the future, as they continue to build on crafting, which seems to be quite the focus right now. So they're, you know, there is a lot of like progress happening from, like, you know, what it was a bit ago to what it is now. Because there seems to be a focus on it, but in the future, you'll have to do some kind of, as Nafel put it, a challenge when you hit that button.
I think that's really important that is planned, because
I just click the button, it makes the item.
Click it, make it. No, it needs to be more than that. There's definitely needs to be more than that. Cause I mean, to be honest, I mean, and we'll talk about this coming up in the next part here, but like,
you need something to be a little bit more engaging. It's missing.
Right? Something's missing. Yeah. Something's missing in this whole process, because I really thought it was neat, but not very like, not something that I would be like challenged mentally in any way to do it, or in any sense of challenge, you know, like whether it's just dexterity or mental challenge or like anything. I felt like it was very simple. So I think that piece that he said is super important, and I need that in my crafting or gathering if it's
gonna be a part of it. I would agree, that is my preference. There are plenty of huge MMOs that just have a click to craft situation, but I would love to kind of see what they're wanting this to look like. We didn't really get much detail on this, other than just the confirmation. You know, it sounds like maybe it's some sort of problem solving or like a puzzle, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, to give them the benefit of the doubt, I mean, at least if you're going to do it like this, it's instant and it's not some fake bar that goes across the screen where you're actually doing nothing, you know, and it's like, there's no point in this bar. It's just trying to make me feel like something is happening. And it's like, I know there's nothing I need to do here. It's just wasting my time.
Dude, so, for sure.
I mean, if you're not going to put anything in there, at least it's instant. So,
yeah. I mean,
looking at you, New World.
Oh, New World doesn't have a bar.
I remember.
No, you click the button in New World. It does the thing.
Maybe I'm thinking of something.
I think it was Guild Wars or Guild Wars 2 that just has like
All right, sorry, New World. Anyway, looking at you, Guild Wars 2.
I might be wrong on that too. It's been a long time since I crafted in Guild Wars 2. But anyway, he did note also that in some cases you could lose some of the ingredients if you fail the challenge. This is kind of following up with what he said in that previous developer roundtable. It sounds like they're leaning more towards the less penalizing, like you're not going to lose everything kind of a deal. But he did bring this up again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wanted to mention it, that there might be some element of loss.
Right. Yeah. Well, good stuff. And now the second sort of overarching area that they talked about was the harvesting process, in terms of the actual, like, what do you do while you're harvesting? And it was very similar to, you know, what you do during combat, you know? So they showed off the similarities. And I think it was clear to see that there's a direct connection between how combat is handled and how harvesting is handled. You saw the character doing some mining and using the skills that were associated with the mining pick and the abilities that they had. There were some interesting ones, and one of them was, you know, a way of speeding up your mining, but you also took damage while doing the mining. So that was an interesting one. Trying to make harvesting into a more interactive and dynamic process. So, you know, like, just like we were saying about the actual crafting process, not just clicking a button and waiting for a mineral or a material to end up in your inventory, actually doing things while the harvesting is going on. We've all played those types of games, right? So this opens up a whole new realm of I think progression as a harvester. So
true.
I was interested.
Well, just to be clear, you can just click and wait.
Yes, you can.
They've left that option in. But if you want to expedite the process, which you're definitely going to want to do, especially if there's danger nearby. Which I think was the whole joke. If you guys didn't actually watch the stream, which I mean, most of our listeners probably have watched the stream, but they did a whole bit in there, where, you know, a bunch of bears are hanging around and Minus is trying to get the node before it was hilarious, but, you know, and also Sav ran off with his ore. You'll want to lean into the abilities and know what's a good idea at what point, because, you know, some drain your endurance, some, you know, they have penalties, which, you know, is kind of something that I was enjoying that they're at least leaning into a little bit, is like kind of having pros and cons, where there's more like trade-offs rather than just like sheer bonuses. I like that system a lot better than just like they still had some abilities. It was just like, this deals 300% damage. And I'm like, right. See, that's not interesting to me, but, you know, something that drains you or like hurts you in exchange for getting it done faster. Now that's interesting right. to me. Because the danger really, I mean, obviously you can take damage from using these abilities and stuff, but the danger is definitely in the environment around you and your awareness of what is around you. You know, if you're going to have a mob path on you or something, like that's kind of the tension of gathering, mm-hmm. it seems, or at least that's the intention of it, right?
Yeah, you know, that's, I'm glad you said that, because I was struggling to find where the tension was here. You know, like I was watching the stream and then reflecting on it today, and I'm like, okay, I get it, I get what they want, but I don't really see where this is going. Why am I trying to harvest this as fast as possible? Is it just because I just like to do things fast, and why not do it fast when I can, right? Like, I didn't really see the tension of it. And when we were sort of, you know, talking before recording here, like figuring it out that the environment is the key factor here. And without the danger of the environment and without the tension that brings, it's sort of like, what's the point? And I asked this question of Nefel on Pantheon Plus You, right? So I'm going to kind of like skip ahead here and like set, cause I kind of said, you know, like why would I care about a critical hit on the ore? Like, what does that do for me? Is it just about mining speed? And he sort of reminded us that, like, this is intended to work in the future when there's other things in play, climates, fractures, you know, are around, and you're doing things in an environment where you need to take account for those things. And they may actually even play into, you know, how you interact with the node itself. Maybe there's a feedback, you know, effect or something like that on the node.
Yeah, that was brought up. Like a fracture.
Yeah, right? Like it hit, right, like it sort of hits back, you know, so you're sort of in combat with the node, because, you know, I think in past games, and I'm not, you know, I'm just sort of like loosely remembering this, but like, it's always been about trying to get more of the material. It's never been about like trying to
do it faster,
do it quickly. Yeah, you're not trying to like kill the node, because the node's not a threat to you. It's just been about getting better stuff or more stuff, right? Now we're in combat with these nodes that are somehow a threat to us. It seems like, but I think the point and the takeaway is that it's the environment is the threat. And right now in this demonstration, other than those bears,
they tried to portray that, right? They were kind of going for that.
It came off more as a joke than like a thing, because it would have been, actually, you know, would have been better if one of those bears had actually attacked Minus while he was harvesting the ore. I kind of wish that had happened talking about it.
I gotta give props that they tried to like communicate that. It was just like, I everything, at least in chat, so everyone is kind of caught up with the goofiness of it, right? But I know that there was a point behind it, so I got to call that out.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so when you get into it a little deeper, and they talked about the progression aspect of being a gatherer, right? So you had these abilities. Nefel said that they want every profession to have a set of 10 to 12 abilities, which is pretty cool, right? Like,
yeah.
But as long as they're like useful and they do things, right? That you want,
yeah.
That have some point, you know, not just abilities for the sake of abilities. And I'm not saying like they would do that, but like we need to put those other things in the game that make those abilities useful.
Right. And I do want to mention, they did like kind of lean into saying, like, you know, we don't want to just have a lot of abilities, you know, just to like have a bunch of abilities. Right. But I think when you start, I don't know, 10 to 12 compared to adventuring isn't that much. Right. And you know, maybe this is kind of part of specializing is, you know, maybe you just generally run around with mostly mining techniques or mining, you know, abilities on your bar. I don't know. But like having some abilities that you can swap in and out and like kind of lean into what you liked, you know, how you like to do things, is cool. And I don't, 10 to 12 doesn't sound too excessive to me. Again, you know, cause that's end game, right? Like that's in total. So,
Yeah, I like the fact, like, I like the idea that you are like an uber miner, but like you're super slow lumberjack, you know, like
you can one shot
a node, like nobody, you know, like an ore node. But when it comes to a tree, like you need to get somebody else to help you.
Right.
Because you're so
right.
Slow.
And we'll get to that. We will get to that. But on the note of abilities, though, it was kind of asked like how, you know, we get those abilities. And one interesting little tidbit that I brought from the chat. So this wasn't even in the stream, or in the video, nice. But Nefel said techniques themselves probably won't be drops, although some might be quested. So that was, I think, a important thing, because when we talk about questing, you know, we're also bringing in faction and all these other kind of horizontal progression things. So when it means, you know, specializing, or I use that like loosely, right? It's like, you might actually seek out gathering techniques that are preferable that aren't just, you know, going to drop through adventuring. And he did note also, just as an aside, that schematics, on the other hand, will mostly be found, or he said often will be found as drops, or at least the rare ones will. So on the crafting side, because schematics are kind of like your blueprint for a craft, you will want to, like, you'll be getting those kind of like spell drops, you know, something really exciting, like, oh, yes.
Anyway, man, the days of spell drops. God, I miss those days. I miss them so much.
Did we get a spell drop during the stream? If we didn't, I wish.
Yes. Cool. No, I think we did. Okay. I think we did. It was one of Drax, but I think he already had.
Oh, well.
I'm trying to remember the name of it. Him.
No. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we did. I'm pretty sure we did. But man, oh man, like, you know, techniques and schematics, you know, like the thought of them, people questing for specific techniques as a crafter is really cool. They did show that window. You know, you saw the window, and I think there was the ones there that we've seen before. There might have been one new one. I think there was like one I hadn't seen, but we can go back and look at it a little more closely in the video. But yeah, you know, like, overall, Desrin, I thought it was like a nice demonstration. I think it highlighted the process, but I also think it sort of showed off, you know, it's an incomplete system. It's an incomplete system that isn't as engaging without some of the other factors at play. You know, as we've been talking, I'm getting a better understanding, and hopefully our listeners are getting a better understanding of, you know, why you would use these abilities in the moment. And, you know, some of the questions that I had are sort of getting answered, you know, like, for example, like the node, it showed it like level 10, right? If you look at the number beside its name, it was like, what is a level 10 node? Like, why is that important? And what does that do for it? And, you know, is it really just about efficiency, or is it about avoiding danger? So hopefully the placement of nodes is a little curated, I would say, to make sure that you're fully utilizing this system. I think that'll have to happen. If they're just out in the middle of open in a safe spot, like, you're
oh, it's yeah,
not
This kind of came up a little bit. I know we're I'm trying to juggle notes here a little bit as well, but
I know. Yeah.
So the nodes, just to reiterate something that I said prior, they're kind of pseudo random. So there's potentially thousands of spawn locations in a zone, and only a small fraction of them are up at one time. So,
right.
So like Nefel kind of noted this all in the chat, so I'll just kind of quote this, but Nefel said, for those concerned about rarity of gathering nodes, don't be. You know, you'll be able to find them if you go looking, but if you want like specific types, you might need to go to specific places, and some of those will be more dangerous than others, but gathering solo is still an option. And I think what he's touching on there is there are some restrictions on where they can spawn. So, you know, you can imagine there are nodes that spawn often in a dungeon might not always be present on the surface, so you'd want to find a way to go into the dungeon to get those nodes, but there's not always going to be a node in the same place. I think that's kind of the general gist.
So no node camps. No,
I don't think so.
No node raids, if you will.
Yeah, you'd be waiting a long time. I know, you know, that's a long time that you could be like looking for other nodes, right? So
it's true. I mean, yeah, and again, like, this is going to be something I'm going to be looking at this pre-alpha test this weekend, is try and get a sense of where the placement is, because, you know, you didn't, if you watched our pre-alpha stream, we didn't find any nodes, to be honest. We went looking for them, right? I remember we were going to go into the Goblin Cave there, and we didn't find any.
And I want to speak to that, but that is an unfortunately NDA thing. But
I know.
I think it would be safe to say that that wasn't intentional.
Yeah, it wasn't intentional. Yeah, it was a problem.
Yeah.
But we'll leave it at that.
I did want to, like, one last little nugget before we start talking about group harvesting, because I know we're going long, but we have to talk about it. there was one bean, just in case you missed it, was that sounds like wood cutting and harvesting, like for plants, are the next things coming for gathering. Pretty soon, it sounds like. Well, it really sounds like now that they've got these things kind of like generally set up, like, you know, nodes are entities and they're treated like this, and we've got this kind of framework, you know, the next stuff is going to be start coming in. Interesting, you know, more gathering stuff. That is something to look forward to, you know, more diversity.
Definitely is, yeah. And I think that that's something that they've tried to sort of show that's their process, is we get something set up, we get a template, and then we start adding, you know, we do the other aspects of it from that template. So now, I mean, have they done that, you know, consistently? That's another discussion.
We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. That's the idea anyway. So like you said, let's talk about group harvesting, because I thought this was the other big umbrella under which a lot of the information fit. They said they want to emphasize the social aspect of gathering and crafting. Creating group activities in dungeon during downtime is something that I think we talked about on Pantheon Plus U. Really focusing on crafting and gathering, not being treated like a mini game or a side project in the game. I love
that was one of my biggest like quote notes, is like gathering and crafting should not be treated like a side game. And it's funny, because some people do prefer that. They prefer it to just be kind of this extra thing. But that's not the direction we're going with Pantheon, because if it's just a side thing that everyone can do and it's like really inconsequential, it doesn't push the social side. Group harvesting, being involved with others for crafting, like it, and this is going to be a returning thing, but it's about how it all works together. You know, like it's funny, we're just talking about crafting and gathering, but how much of the other sides of the game have we had to talk about as well, because it all ties into each other.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, I would encourage people listening to this to go back on this channel and look for our episode where we interviewed Kevin Jordan, one of the original class designers from World of Warcraft. Super knowledgeable, super experienced guy. And he was adamant that if you design a system in a game and you treat it like a secondary system, your players are going to treat it like a secondary system, and it's not going to be worth your time to do. If you're going to do something, do it right, do it fully, and make it a primary piece of your world, right? So I really always, that stuck with me, and I just, it stays in my head.
Yeah.
All these,
you know, good to keep in mind
years later. Cause yeah. Comment that was brought up on the Pantheon Plus U when we got a chance to talk to Nefel, you know, like, talking about the loot that we get from the nodes, like as a group harvesting, how do we decide who gets what, you know, rolling on that loot. How are we doing? It's
so funny to me, the things that like people focus on, like, cause to me, when this was brought up, right, like they did the skit, right? They did the video, and Savanya like takes off with the ore,
looted and ran
and
all away. This.
And like, I'm constantly surprised by like people got a little bit uppity about this. Like to me, I'm like, really, you don't think VR is gonna add like a loot system? Like, come on, like,
of course. Whenever you bring in other people into an activity, there's just like this immediate, you know, tightening of, you know what, that like people just clam up or like,
yeah,
oh my god, you know, like something bad might happen. And it's like, no, that's when the fun shit happens. You know, like that's when you get into, I mean, you know, like it'll be managed.
Yeah,
don't worry about it. Like, it'll be fine.
They know, like they know how this stuff works.
Yeah. And
they've even talked publicly about like a loot system. You know, had need before greed and all. That's of course, guys. Like, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
But on the other notes, I like that. I'm going to steal your note here. They're talking about like making food benefits for the different classes. And they showed some kind of like alternative food, which I brought up on the Plus U because I was excited about, you know, endurance food. You know, that we're already seeing things that aren't specifically adventuring. But yeah.
Because some classes are going to be able to benefit from that more than others. Maybe you're a crafter primarily, and you need the climbing, you know, the extra ability to climb to get to a node that's up in a cliff, which we have seen, so maybe you're crafting this for yourself as a crafter, or maybe you're crafting it for somebody else, you know, cooking this specific meal for a specific purpose. I love that stuff. And this is the interdependency, like you just referenced, of one sphere of the game interacting with another sphere and overlap and good old interdependency amongst classes and groups. So another point that was brought up was, you know, talking about different regions giving different components, different harvesting materials, not necessarily being better, just being different, differently available in different regions. Some of the concept art from the Rones showed some pretty exotic stuff, and there's mention in the notes on those concept art pieces.
A lot of notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to bring it up during the show, but I didn't. I wasn't quick enough to get my directories up to reference the concept art. But maybe I'll throw it in the video if I remember here, so people can see what I'm talking about. But definitely some rare materials and some, you know, diversity of location
when
it comes to stuff you're gonna want.
Honestly, this might have been my highlight of the stream. Because there's just some implications that come with regional ingredients. And, you know, this might not even be just like cooking, you know, we're talking the whole spiel, right? I think it's a really big deal, and I hope they really lean into this. Because, you know, the example they gave was like, you know, finding apples in Thronefast, but maybe those aren't in Wild's End, and you have something else in Wild's End that does something, you know, is an ingredient that makes something different. And that's like a key thing that, like, maybe, you know, in Thronefast, I think where they showed like a stamina food at one point. It's like maybe in Thronefast, like stamina food is like pretty easy to come by. But then in Wild's End, it's like not, which, you know, it sounds like a kind of silly thing, but those little differences can add up to where you have a certain sense of place and identity with a region when you go somewhere else, when it's like, oh yeah, I'm so used to, you know, this recipe and, you know, getting my strength bonus when you go somewhere else. And it's like, wow, you know, they've got all this wisdom food, but like, you know, and then you have to start, you know, moving stuff from one place to another, or at least, you know, having it on hand. And there's just so much interesting stuff that comes from, you know, every ingredient not being everywhere. That's a big thing where I feel like games like EQ2 really kind of dropped the ball, because it was like literally the same stuff you know, it was just by like yeah. level range. So, you know, if you're in a 10 to 20 area, you like, you just get the same thing, no matter if you're on the other side of the world or not. And missed opportunity, yeah. I think.
Yeah. I mean, just think about it. Like, what if, you know, I mean, I don't think I'd be eating any steaks from Scargill. I'll just tell you that much. You never know where that meat is coming from, you know, like there might be some funny business going on there. But even going back to use the Vanguard example again, right? Remember the different styles of crafting?
Yes.
The three different yep. continents. And I mean, the wood that made one type of style, if I'm remembering correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, Des, but like, you know, you needed a certain type of wood for to craft in a certain style.
Anyway, it was a bit different. They actually fell into the same kind of issue where it was more about level range. It was like this, you know, you got the same thing out of the nodes, no matter yeah. where you're at. They had, I mean, if you're leaning into the different geographical styles, because I think that's relevant, those were actually based on mm-hmm. kind of more of a faction grind. And so, right. you know, if right. you would get more recipes for the Kalian style of this or the Thestran style of this, they had an innate bonus on those things that actually really mattered with the end product. And so it made for some really interesting crafting gameplay where an abundance of Kalian goods on this continent, which I already know it gave like a slight heal. I think it was like, there was anyway, that really mattered. And
yeah.
Until they made fast travel really easy, like you actually saw more of, you know, those goods on that continent. And it's the same idea, just taken to the yeah. ingredients.
Yeah, regional rarity, right? And that is how you build an economy. So interesting stuff. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. So just sort of wrap up our overall thoughts on this stream. You know, I'll say it was a nice update on where crafting and gathering systems are in terms of Pantheon's overall development. You know, are they as far along as I'd like them to be? No. But you could say that pretty much for the entire game. But I do want to reserve a little bit of judgment here until after this weekend's test, so I can get a little better feel for it, how it feels in to actually play with it. You know, I think once, much like the classes, you know, once the template's established, they can move a little bit more expediently to implement all the professions that they have planned for Pantheon. It's hard to convey, but, you know, it was a fun stream, and we certainly had a good time on Pantheon Plus U afterwards. But it's hard not to feel like this part of development, like many others, there's still a lot of ideas, right? It's still a lot of ideas yeah. and not a lot of it is really in yet. Nefel, I think, would be the first to admit that. He's been on the team for, you know, a few years now. My estimation, and if I had to guess, I'd say that he's done a lot of planning, a lot of design, but the programming resources haven't really been freed up to implement a lot of his plans and designs. I mean, that's my guess. I don't know how you feel about that.
I would agree. And I also think that Nefel was probably utilized elsewhere in the meantime as well, right? Like, you know, I'm sure he helped sure. out on other sure. things, since he was kind of waiting on those resources, but, it's a love hate thing. We love
yeah, yeah.
that everything in Pantheon seems to be so incredibly well thought out and connected, right? Like, I'm not gonna say that I want to sacrifice that, really, because I really praise the amount of, I don't know, there's thoughtfulness, I guess, that's in this game, you know, where another game there, they could be like, oh yeah, harvesting, we'll just, yeah, we'll, you know, do that in a month and boom, you click on the thing, you get the thing, you leave. Like,
right.
And then the right. Pantheon's like, well, you know, how does that affect, you know, all these different things? And like, it's very thought out. And I really appreciate that. But I can't help but agree with you to be like, if you're looking at the project as a whole, you know, a lot of people thought Alpha was going to come up early this year. And we are creeping on the progress.
Yeah.
And it's still forward progress. We get monthly updates. Stuff is happening. It's great. There's forward progress. It's very slow. And there's no denying that. I know the dev team is just as dedicated as ever and excited about what they're doing. And, you know, with their small team, they're making progress. And that's really something to commend. But, you know, on the whole, it's like, man, we have an MMO to make. So, yeah. It does make it a bit daunting to look at this and kind of give an overall, I'm super excited. I wouldn't say I'm excited.
Yeah.
Actually, I would say I'm satisfied that progress is being made, especially if we look at the tease they did a month ago versus what we're seeing now. So it's like, okay, mm-hmm. like that's good progress. And it really may just be the fact that suddenly, as they mentioned, you know, Steve and Robert, mostly Steve, it sounds like, are doing a lot of crafting stuff. And it's like, wow, they got a lot done now that they are, you know, working on it. You like, that's one perspective. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, man, there's a lot of other stuff. There's a lot of stuff on that roadmap. And, you know, we're just trying to get the basic things in for alpha.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where it gets scary, right? When you start to like extrapolate where we need to be versus where, what we've seen. And you're like, whoa, you know, it's just like, it's going to take a while. And that's, like you said, there was a lot of predictions about first quarter, spring 2023, when might be the alpha window, you know, and it's hard to see that right now.
Yeah. But I will say, I think by the time we do get to alpha, though, just based on, you know, like I said, our creeping progress, but progress nonetheless, I feel like the game is going to be in a really good basic state at that point when we do reach that milestone. Just because, like, stuff like we were talking about with, like, the tiny little quality of life bits, you know, how the cooking, you know, all the ingredients and everything, that whole kind of how that system's put together. It's like, there's actually like a decent amount of neat stuff with that. And that's all, you know, that's alpha stuff. All specialization, you know, all that other stuff can come later and really fill out the system. But I'm satisfied with what alpha is going to look like. And that's kind of what I get out of this is like, they got resources, they're doing the thing. It's a solid kind of tier one situation, and
yeah,
that's it. Satisfied.
We'll get there. We'll get there eventually. We'll get there eventually. Be patient, which is not always easy. So that's our overall view of the dev stream this month. I want to give a shout out to they did another giveaway to give people access to this month's pre-alpha test, which is, as I've said, this weekend. So this weekend they gave away three of those pre-alpha access passes to three folks: Thomas Lamb, Donald Runkel, and Something Cool is the name, which is nicely done there. So good job there. And if you saw the little announcement that came along with this access giveaway, that screenshot is pretty sweet, Des. I think
looking out into I'm assuming Avandir's Pass, but we see a nice King's Bloom in the foreground. Yes. And it's just kind of a little cool sneak peek. I know the PA community was in a bit of a rustle to be like, oh no, are we going to Avandir's Pass? And, you know, it's all that fun stuff. But I am really glad that they're doing these giveaways, because it's kind of like, why not, you know?
Sure, yeah. If you have the ability to do it, totally should.
It also, you know, it's a lot cheaper for... No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, I mean, if we were able to give away
somebody, we still would. Yeah, we still would.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, that's actually something that I'm going to try and see if we can get to do that at some point. Drac and I have mentioned that, discussed that amongst ourselves. So we'll see. But that would be great.
Excited for the test, though. It is funny how regular these are getting. So, like, it feels so common. I actually was going to talk about this in the intro a little bit, but it's like, it's almost like they're coming up fast now. It's like, oh, wow. Yeah, we got another test this weekend. Oh, okay.
Like, so crazy how it feels like it was just last weekend that we were doing the stream, right?
And like,
but here it's been 3 weeks.
Last year before, and all this stuff, it's like we would have foamed at the mouth for a test, and now it's like literally a span of a few months. We're not even halfway through the year, and everyone's like, oh yeah, this is just kind of like how it is now. It's like
it's
the luster just immediately wears off, you know.
It's so true. Oh, we're a fickle bunch, aren't we? We're a fickle bunch. But that's the news for the week. Let's look at our Pantheon Plus notes. So here's the calendar for what we're doing this week coming up. The Midnight Crew continues on selling merch on the Storm while they play After Dark Midnight's Eastern on the on our Twitch channel. They're still playing Dark Age Camelot on the Hibernia Eden server, I should say, doing their thing. So that's they're having lots of fun, and from what I hear, we did our first raid ever on the 101 show, which was last week, and it was amazing. We had a good time.
A lot of people died.
Took down. A lot of people died. A lot of people died, and it was chaotic. Definitely chaotic. We had 12 people on stream, going through the. And for some reason, we started at tier two of this raid level, which might I say. I voiced my opposition to right at the start. Stans and I were the only voices of reason saying this might not be a good idea, but we were overtaken by the 101's fanatical approach.
They think
to
they're all that.
They do.
They think they're all that.
Man. Sometimes they are all that, but not this night. We managed to take down two raid bosses, and then we had to give it up. But we're going to go back at it this next week. Coming up on Tuesday, we're going to try, I think, tier one to see if we can get a little further in this time. That'll be fun. On Thursday is Parting the Veil from VR. So, of course, following that, you, Desrin, you're going to be hosting Pantheon Plus YouTube.
Yep.
Right?
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
Correct. Yes. Good. That's that goes right immediately following the VR show, which is at 9 p.m.
And this Eastern might be a really good Twitch one channel. Too. This is talking about the open world, you know, which is yes. very open ended thing. But I mean, I can't like it's a great topic. So I think we're gonna have great plus you too.
One of my favorite topics for sure. On Friday, our friend Redbeard Flynn has a video coming out on his channel talking about the new Riot MMO that's in the works and being developed. So interesting to hear about that. On Saturday, our friend Fate has a new fan fiction piece going up on our website. That's pantheon.plus called Bronze and Iron. Yay. So looking forward to reading that. And yeah, so that's fun. And I want to talk about a new show that we are doing. So the idea here is that we want to fill in those Sundays that the Rewind's not on, the off weeks, if you will. I had the idea. It was actually, I have to give Fate credit because she had the idea that we should do co-op RPG adventures. We should stream some co-op adventures. And I was like, yeah, that's a really good idea. And they mentioned Solasta, Crown of the Magister, which is a game that I've played a bit of. I really liked it, but I just never continued with it. So we're actually going to be doing a four-person co-op adventure, and this is a show. We're going to call it Quests and Coffee. That was the big creative piece of my little getaway last week. I'm like, come up with a name for a show. So episode one of Quests and Coffee is going to be Sunday, March 26th. It's at the same time as Rewind, as the Rewind would normally be, noon Eastern, so that you don't have to adjust if you want to show up and watch our adventures. It's going to be streamed on our YouTube channel. It's myself, Fate, Sparrow, and Desrin was going to join, but Desrin, your life upheval.
Yeah.
There's some things going on that.
Yeah, I might have missed the first two episodes and for a co-op game, you know.
Yeah, that would be a little unfortunate. So I wish you could join us, but we do have a fourth member that's in the works. I'm not 100% committed from them yet, so we'll find out, but to be determined. But definitely join us. It's going to be fun, and I'm really excited about what this is going to look like. I'm going to try and, you know, get a nice fancy overlay set up and have some fun with it. So so yeah, and there was something else you wanted to mention too,
This is just kind of a silly tease, but I've heard some vague rumblings that Man of Rohan he's got something going, something of the musical nature, and we all know how good his musical bits are. So look out for that next week-ish. I think it's more of a hopefully kind of a situation, but you better bet I'm gonna be promoting the heck out of that as soon as it comes up.
Okay. Love it. I cannot wait to hear it. I still have fond memories of the last one he released, sort of being in the perfect mindset to hear that type of music. And it was just such a,
I heard a preview really and I'm pretty excited.
Yeah. He put a preview in the Discord today. I haven't listened to it yet, but I did see it. So I'm going to listen to that tonight, actually. And then the last thing I want to mention, it is that time of the year again. It is almost April. And you know what that means? We're just getting over March Madness. Now it's time for the Pantheon Plus yearly draft.
Yes.
This is the fourth annual one. If you can believe that, we're going to be doing the fourth annual Pantheon Plus draft. So it's scheduled. The date is set April 27th, 9 p.m. Eastern. Mark your calendars. Drac the Wizard is at hard at work getting this set up. I don't have a lot of details from him yet, but I do have a promo video to show everybody. So yeah, check this out. So yeah, looking forward to that. And that is this week's VR News and Notes.
The Pantheon community is full of cool projects, new people, and things that are just worth sharing. Hmm? What's this over here? Look at that. So let's see what we can find in this week's community spotlight. Well, we've been gone for 2 weeks, and it kind of feels like everyone else was
a little bit of crickets.
Yeah. I, you know, not to be negative or anything, but I was really hoping to kind of come back to a nice stockpile of community content. But it seems like other folks are kind of taking some time off too. So only one kind of big content thing to note, and that's from our awesome dude, Ben and I. He's got Ammon Saul's Shadow, Fox and the Wolf Part 4. I am loving these. They're so atmospheric, and honestly, I think his writing's pretty dang good, man. Especially, like I said last episode, I really like the little poems for some reason. It hits me right in the Aesop fable kind of a.
Yeah, he's so talented. I think he's such a the style of writing. Sometimes people can be great writers, but the style doesn't mesh with how your brain needs to input the information, and his writing style really works for me.
Same. I also kind of wanted to point out that we do have a bit of new fan art. We usually kind of shout this out, but you know, if you have fan art and you want to submit it, we like to feature it on the show in a nice little cycle, just get everyone in there. But keep an eye out. These are some new pieces from Lone Lion Art, who's this is the first time we've featured their stuff on the show. And both of these are Darkmer related. And I think they look awesome. It's a cool style.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I was so happy when I saw them posted, and then I think you reached out to them and said like, hey, can we put this on the Rewind
immediately.
Art reel? And I was like ecstatic that you did that, because I was like, wow, it's, you know, I'm always a little like hesitant to do that, because I don't want to be like, you know, it's not for our benefit.
Oh, no, I'm on that.
Share it and put a spotlight on it. Yeah.
As soon as I saw like the first one, they mentioned it was like an old piece, like something they did a long time ago. And it was the full picture, Darkmer. And I was like, oh, dude, this is so epic. And then I think it was like the next day, they're like, oh, well, I just kind of like did another one real quick this morning. And it's like a portrait and it looks awesome. And I'm like, okay, can you just keep doing that, please? Look out for them. And I'm sure they'll be putting out more. If it's that easy, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and I'm sure I mentioned it on a previous show, but we've had a couple new pieces of art to join the art reel recently. I know Annoying Llama has a piece in there now, which is very cool. And if you have, like Des said, I know there's artists out there, and I know that even if you're just super amateur, like, you know, like a writer, whatever, throw it in our Rewind, in our Discord channel for the Rewind art, and we'd love to feature
totally.
So don't be shy.
Well, I do really hope that our content creators in the community kind of wake up from their slumber a bit, because I really love featuring this stuff. And I don't ever want to like not do this segment because there's not a lot of stuff. So it's just someone come out here and fill stuff up. I think even if you're not like a big content creator or anything like that, if you've ever kind of felt like, I just kind of want to try it, just do it. I'll put it here, you know, just because I want to. But I think now's a great time because, like I said, not a lot of people are doing it, and you know, maybe as well shoot your shot.
That's right. Shoot your shot, and the spotlight will be all on you, right?
So, well, yeah, no pressure.
Now's the time. No pressure.
But anyway, that is going to be it for this week's Community Spotlight.
Sit back and relax. It's time for The Lore You Know. All right, so it's time to finish the tale of the Eridola. So you'll recall 2 weeks ago we heard the beginnings of their tale where we learned about them, who they are and their background and sort of what their lifestyle is like. Now we get into a little bit of the other side of their culture, and that is learning about the Detadola, another sort of sub or another branch of their culture, I guess, learning about their connection to the seas and all just a little bit more detail about who they are as a people. So sit back and relax and listen to the words of J.N. Gerhardt, VR's lead writer, as I read the lore of the Eridola. The Eridola tale is not complete without at least mentioning their seaborne counterparts, the Detadola. While little is known about the Eridola past, far less is even suggested about the Detadola, aside from how they exist today. Dwelling in waterbound equivalents to Woda, the Detadola spend their entire life on the sea in communities of rafts, ships, and even floating chunks of land. Eridola and Detadola use a term similar to cousin to describe each other, but aside from a mutual warm and hospitable nature, they have little in common. While Eridola may move from one Woda to the next, a transition from Eridola to Detadola is far more difficult. Life on the open sea seems best endured if begun in childhood, while few Detadola can tolerate life on land. This is due to the months or even years of land sickness, where the relative stability of the land works against the Detadola seaborne equilibrium. The Detadola no doubt have their own tales of the sea, but carry little of the storytelling fervor of their land-based brethren. Perhaps it is fitting to close with a tale that is sung around all Eridola fires, that of the Carpenter and the Queen. As it goes, there was once a beautiful island queen. Of course, she was beautiful, for as the Eridola say, the most handsome king is a king you cannot see. This queen was beautiful, yes, but also quite ruthless, conquering each of her rival nations while still young in her rule. Finished with conquest, her throne was carved into the highest cliff on the tallest mountain on the island, from which she surveyed her empire and the seas beyond, believing she had conquered the world. According to the song, these people believed there was only their island and the sea in all of existence. None had ever ventured beyond the shore. Yet, one night, the queen awoke from a terrible dream, and before the sun had risen, she summoned her most skilled rulers to lend their wisdom. As the flames of her throne room whipped up in the wind atop the cliffs, the queen exclaimed she had witnessed a new world in her dream, a land beyond the sea she must conquer. She demanded that they find a way to reach that land, under pain of death. First, the queen's most powerful mage declared he would push the waters away until her armies could walk on dry land to that new world. Yet, after several boisterous attempts, he generated only a few waves. Impatient, the queen ordered him thrown off the cliff, his body finally making good on a promise to part the waves. A wizened sage next claimed she could pull the new land to their island, an idea the queen seemed to love. But this boast fared as well as her counterparts, thus her body was next cast off the cliff and into the sea. The queen's oldest summoner claimed he could simply make the new lands appear, which he did. Yet after many tries, he managed only a small mound of earth. Thus, he became a small mound of flesh on the rocks below. One after another, the mightiest minds of the empire failed to satisfy the queen's demand, until at last there came a carpenter up her steps. Quiet and poor, he had nothing but a few tools and a family to his name. Amused, the queen laughed and asked the weary carpenter how he would possibly bring his queen to this new world. "I would build you a boat," he said. "Indeed, I already have. It is a ship great enough to hold you and your army, and it is waiting on the shore. It is my life's work. I had one day hoped to use it myself, but I offer it to you, my queen. Falling silent, the queen demanded to be carried down to the shore to see the vessel. Her skepticism melted away under the promise that this craft was indeed the key to fulfilling her dream. Within days, she and her army boarded the ship and cast off, leaving the island behind. The carpenter watched from the shore with his family, the ship speeding off, with a magnificent smile widening across his face. His wife observed this and asked why he smiled so large when his greatest creation was being taken away. "What has been made once may be made once more," he replied as the queen and her armies sailed toward the horizon, never to be seen again. "But what is lost may never again be found." Much like the Iridola, the islanders soon traveled the world, but never again served a queen or a king. And that is The Lore You Know. And that's the end of episode 141. So hopefully people enjoyed that. And I know, like we said, we wanted to do a little bit longer to keep you tided over until 2 weeks from now when the next episode comes up. But I am looking forward to seeing everybody next Sunday for the episode one of Quests and Coffee. I hope that you can show up for that. At least come and check it out and say hi. If you don't like it, that's fine. You just pop in, say hi, and no problem at all. But as we said at the outset, you know, our gratitude remains. We are going to continue to keep doing the Rewind, and it's not going away, not going to pod fade on you like some other shows have. I like that term. I don't know why. I heard it once and I was like, yeah, that happens all the time. I hate it when shows do that.
It is pretty funny. So, I just randomly saw this on the internet. I'm so sorry that I'm doing this in the outro, but there was like apparently some truck like ran through a cafe's like the side of a cafe or something, like, you know, lost control, ran into it. They literally ran into like these two dudes that were like recording a podcast at a cafe. And so like the quip is really? Like, this just goes to show that in 2023, you literally can't crash a car without hitting some dudes doing a podcast. and podcasts are great. I would like to think that we're, you know, at least somewhat worth listening to sometimes. That just keeps coming to mind. It's like, yep.
That is so true. It's hilarious. It's hilarious because it's true. That's the love about, you know, the there's no barriers to like creating this stuff anymore. Yeah. It becomes so, you know, democratized. Everybody can do it. Everybody's got a voice and everybody can put their voice out there. And hey, man, it's that's part of it. Speaking of podcasts, I can't believe we didn't mention this, but our friend Nathan Napalm has a new podcast called Game Geezen. It's not Pantheon. I mean, he does have Deimos, which is, you know, we know Deimos and we love Deimos and Deimos is awesome. He's got him and Deimos Steven's brother, Dave, I think. I can't remember his name. Anyway, but they're great. Episode one was great. I honestly encourage people to listen to it because if you want Nathan Napalm's brand of wackiness, it's dripping with Nathan's nonsense, which I cannot get enough of. So, you know, podcasting is great and Nathan's doing a good job. So definitely check that out. And with that, Desmond, this is what happens when I don't put notes in our script for the outro. We just start talking about random man. Things.
Just for everyone that's starting to leave now, it's like, you know what, guys? Like, you've waited this long. Like, you've waited this long.
Yeah.
This is the bonus content that you may not even want, but you're going to get it. Thank you so much, guys, for sticking with us. And I hope you enjoy these slightly longer but less frequent shows. And definitely let us know on the Discord, in the YouTube comments, just wherever you can. If you have thoughts about, you know, this change or about what's in the show, of course, you know, lots of crafting and gathering stuff. We'd love to hear your thoughts. It's really encouraging just to know that, you know, there's at least several hundred of you that somehow listen to us, you know, all the time. And that's just such an honor. And we hope we're doing you proud. So thanks a bunch.
Absolutely. Well said. We will see you next
time. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Pantheon Plus Rewind. Pantheon Plus is not affiliated with Visionary Realms. Be sure to check out our Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube channels under the name Pantheon Plus. You can follow Theric at Pantheon Theric on Twitter, and Desrin at Desrin Does also on Twitter. And you can stay up to date with all things Pantheon at www.pantheon.plus. Until next time, cheers, and thanks for listening.